were crouching in the back seat of an unarmored vehicle after hearing a blast and gunshots. The program is run by actors and teachers who understand danger. They're mostly British ex-military.
Get down, get down, get down, get on the floor.
North Star Safety Group has trained some of the best in the biz, including journalists from the BBC and CNN.
My driver's hurt.
Driver's down.
We somehow managed to get the car out of there and escape. But you never know what's around the next corner. Just as we catch our breath, we stumble upon a checkpoint. My mouth is about to get me in trouble.
Call whoever you want.
That's me, being dragged out of the car by a military officer.
No, I need your identification. You move on now.
Anywhere without our identification.
My colleague, Gabby, tries to negotiate my release with that officer.
You can't go anywhere, sir, without our colleague and without a passport.
She will come with me to the station where we will process her. Will take no more than 2 or 3 days. Will you shut your mouth? Will you stop talking while I am talking? This is a problem with bringing women with you. Chat, chat, chat. They do not know when to shut their mouths.
Safety about
shut your mouth, woman!
I made the big mistake of offering this police officer money for his family if he would just let us pass the checkpoint. That's a no-go, especially as a Westerner.
No! You will travel back to your hotel and you will wait there until I contact you. She is under arrest for offering a bribe to a police officer.
There are magic words for these types of run-ins. I just said the wrong ones. Learning in real time with the spits of a military officer on my face to prove it.
Go.
I'm allowed back in the car.
Okay, guys.
That's why I'm like, usually don't speak in other countries. We both can't speak women like that. Too much shit.
Each day gets more intense at this training. If you give up, you don't pass. If you don't pass, many people won't work with you on the ground in a country like Afghanistan.
Oh, yeah, this is the hospital. Here we are.
We pass a hospital on our way home and can't look away. It's overwhelming as we walk in, just a makeshift tent with patients everywhere.
No doctor here. No.
Just some water.
Just as we're trying to help.
Get down! Get down! Get down! On the floor! Patients down! Get down! Out! Out! Get down!
My phone has been recording. I quickly slip it into the outside of my press vest as I join my colleagues face down on the ground. You'll hear the difference. Some rogue group has taken over the compound. There's dozens of men with guns. We're quickly given masks to cover our eyes. And then transported somewhere. Gabby's here.
You, take vest off.
That's me stripping down. But remember, my phone is in the front pocket of that press vest. Can I get it under my shirt and into my bra without anyone seeing? You might be sitting at home thinking, this is play acting, but it feels real. And if you don't believe me, listen to this. That's actually the sound of my heart. It's beating so loudly, it's picking up on my recorder.
captain, but especially your cabin crew.
Whew, hostile training in the books. I've arranged a fixer, sent my letter, scrubbed my social media accounts. Now I'm back in Toronto, just waiting on the Taliban. Still nothing in my inbox. Nothing from the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan, aka the Taliban. It's crazy, my kitchen table is piling up with equipment and all the things that I had to order to get ready for this trip. And yeah, we're just in a holding pattern. It's day 8, and I got an email from the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Afghanistan, which says, hello, we would like to inform you that your request has been rejected. Oh, that is my worst nightmare as a journalist. I was not expecting that at all. I know many journalists who have gotten access in the past year. I feel like there has been every hurdle that could have been thrown at this project this year. I feel like every door that could shut just keeps shutting. Honestly, I'm exhausted. I'm exhausted.
I better loop in Karen.
I don't know. Was I expecting that if they said no to you that you would actually get an explanation?
Yeah, I think that's why yesterday I was just like trying not to cry. I've never in my career been rejected from a country. Been rejected from even being able to see what that country is like from my own eyes. I've never on the front end felt this helpless, honestly. Like this is new territory for me.
I hear that you're really frustrated. Does it occur to you that you're about to go into a country where every single woman feels exactly like that, like completely controlled and completely unable to make decisions about the simplest things?
I can't imagine. Like, I can't imagine that world where, like, everything of your life is controlled and you have no say.
Hold on. You didn't think I was going to give up that easily, did you? Watch out for our second part of our three-part series, Dear Taliban.
Very, very challenging thinking about, you know, my life, how it used to look like and how it is at the moment. You see your peers and other people of your age, and they're like happy, they're out partying, they're living a good life.
How do you cope with that?
I'm a strong girl because I'm an Afghan girl, and Afghan girls are all strong. They have it in their genes, in their blood.
This story was funded in part by the Michener Deakin Awards.
That's your Canada Land. You can email me at jesse@canadaland.com. I read everything you send. Our website is canadaland.com. Molly Thomas reported this episode with help from Karen Pugliese, our editor-in-chief. Our senior producer is Bruce Thorson. Audio production and editing from Tristan Capicchione and Caleb Thompson. I'm Jesse Brown. Our theme music is by So Called. Syndication is handled by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca. Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it.
Julie Shabawali, journalist, lawyer, vice president of the Canadian Association of Journalists, and exec member of the Canadian Association of Black Journalists. Welcome to Shortcuts.
Thank you for having me.
Today on the show, is felonious Trump going to bring round democracy's midnight?
It's a rigged trial and disgrace.
For the first time, a former U.S. president is also a felon. All as an election looms.
Before we get to all the exciting Canadian news, the big political story of the week, of course, was Donald Trump, and I wanted to get everyone's take on the conviction.
One question worth asking now is that Donald Trump is a convicted felon, so can he come to Canada?
And at a time when one of the contenders for the White House is now a convicted felon, saying the system is rigged against him, how do words like that, even in another country, risk undermining faith in the justice system here?
So that last question came from the CBC's Olivia Stefanovic, who was at a press conference being given on months of Canada's Supreme Court, Richard Wagner. Canadian officials have generally not been too keen on speaking about the fact that Donald Trump, who's both the former president of the United States and, more likely than not, the next president of the United States, about the fact that he was found guilty of 34 felony counts in a New York courtroom last Thursday. There's no point in going in circles necessarily about like, what is this going to do for his popularity or not. Like, I think we have a pretty good idea of how that's going to play out, how it'll play out with or for Canada, but more particularly, what are the more immediate implications in regards to justice and the concept of democracy in the Canada and the United States? I just want to get a bit of what the Chief Justice of the Canada Supreme Court said in response to that question. You know, he didn't want to talk specifically about Trump. You know, said basically, as he decided to stop trying to find explanation, and I will rely on you, the media, I will rely on elected officials, on specialists, experts, sociologists, psychiatrists, maybe, to understand, provide an explanation of what we're seeing. I like he threw in psychiatrists there. And what then he then pivoted to was, for Canada, I think we have a very strong democracy and the rule of law, judicial independence, the values that are cherished by Canadians, but we have to protect that. And we said, and one way to protect that is to denounce any attacks on the institutions and the judges so that to make sure that, in fact, all citizens of this country could present before a court, a judge, and have the assurance that the judge is impartial and independent. And, you know, he says there are differences between Canada and the States, but, you know, we have to protect it. We have to make sure that there is no violation of judicial independence and the rule of law to protect our institutions. And it's up to everybody to denounce, including the media. So how should we denounce it?
Oh, you know, it's a pretty simple question, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to unpack here. First of all, this idea of rule of law, fairness, justice. And this is work that I've done as a lawyer in the past, particularly about access to justice. And when you talk to ordinary Canadians, so this is folks who are medium income or lower, can't afford a lawyer. They get into an issue like purchasing a home or something where they're in real legal jeopardy. They are looking for a system that is transparent and accurate and fair, or at least the appearance of fairness. Oh, well, what do you mean by the appearance of fairness, Julie? Well, A plus B equals C. And in this case, we knew that Trump has been lying about his business ventures and how much money he has, and that's how he got convicted, because he lied on those business documents. So how do we explain that to the Canadian public? Has justice actually been served because he's been convicted? Or will justice actually be served when he goes to jail? Or will justice actually be served if he doesn't get elected? What if he does get elected? Does that mean the rule of law still worked?
Yeah, these are all really good questions. I think he's set to be sentenced on July 11th. And I mean, there will probably be levels of appeals, but it's generally expected that it's very unlikely he will face a prison sentence for this. But there are several other, at least three other ongoing criminal proceedings, although it's not clear if any of those other ones will take place prior to the election. I mean, it only just occurred to me while you were speaking, but I think one of the big concerns is not just an erosion of trust in the justice system, was sort of what we were looking at in terms of with the media maybe 10 or 15 years ago, where to an extent, we took for granted that even though people could have very legitimate criticisms of the media in all kinds of ways, there was generally a faith or just enough of a trust or an agreed upon baseline that we could sort of work within that. There was something to go by, some sort of a shared concept of truth to at least some extent. And are we at the beginning of seeing a similar process play out with the justice system in the United States and possibly by extension the justice systems elsewhere?
Oh, absolutely. And this has already begun. And the idea that, oh, this is now the impetus of the erosion of rule of law, this has actually been happening quite a bit. And we can point to what happened post 9/11 and the U.S. going into Afghanistan and Iraq, mm-hmm. and the lead up to that and the media's portrayal of that and the U.S. portrayal of, no, this is a legal war. And I'm being really mm-hmm. specific in mm-hmm. my language here because they were making a case that, no, legally we can, of course, enter into Iraq because there's weapons of mass destruction, which, mm-hmm. of course, we know was not true. So that was the beginning of a large-scale mistrust, not only in the media, but our justice system, because as we know, what happened in that situation, what happened to those perpetrators?
Most of them are still in the same jobs or have since comfortably retired, I would imagine.
Absolutely. And so there wasn't really a holding of an account, even though I would say the public mm-hmm. at the time wanted a holding of account. If you go back, there were a lot of anti-war protests at the time. So now we have a presidential candidate mm-hmm. and a former president who is a convicted felon and who will not pull out of the election, right? He's not going to say, you know what, ethically, I should step back. I'm a convicted felon, so I think I should take myself out of the race. He is not going to do that. We've crossed the Rubicon, folks, in terms of, wait a minute, what are we talking about here when it comes to justice and rule of law and how the media portrays this? Are we going to normalize this behavior? Have we already mm-hmm. normalized this behavior?
That doesn't even make a difference anymore. Is the very idea of normalization almost, it feels very 2017 at this point, very passe, as though, like, well, I don't know, whatever. I mean, obviously what media says and does is of crucial importance, and I agree with the Chief Justice on that point. But it's also somehow maybe it's because we did or because we didn't normalize certain things. Media seems to have a more limited role in the discussion than before. But it is interesting to see various Canadian dailies speaking about this in degrees of apocalyptic terms. The one I just want to start with, one from Stephen Marsh in the Globe and Mail. Marsh is a longtime contributing columnist there. He's an author. He wrote a book, The Next Civil War, Dispatches of the American Future. I describe his politics generally as center-right, or however you describe the Globe and Mail's politics, I would say, are pretty much his politics. But he has some really astute observations here. The article is called Donald Trump is a Criminal and His Conviction is a Catastrophe. Quote, the legal system only works if its validity is accepted by the people under it. The law only works if it is a transcendent force subsuming the fury of partisan politics. The United States legal system is in the process of becoming just the narrow representation of the political interests of those who appointed the judges. And, you know, he says the notion that anyone in America will use this as a moment to consider the larger interests of the public is laughable. And I just want to read these few lines. The courts are now simply politics by other means. The hollowing out of legal institutions is a textbook part of the process by which countries fall apart into civil war. Vectors of polarization overtake the means of legitimacy. And then in particular this passage, indeed, the one benefit of the conviction is that it allows a certain measure of clarity. Donald Trump is a criminal. There is no other word for him. Such clarity can be dangerous, though. What if the Americans want a criminal president? What if they want to become a criminal country?
Yeah, there's a lot to
There's a lot going on there. A lot of things.
Politics in the U.S., everything is political in the U.S. right now. I would argue everything has always been political in the U.S. So if we are clutching our pearls now because Trump has somehow shown the cracks in the justice system, mm-hmm. with all due respect, there's many other reporters and journalists who have been talking about mm-hmm. the injustices that have been happening in the justice system, from the over-incarceration of Black and Indigenous populations. We could go on for days mm-hmm. about this. And so the fact that now it's become politicized and everything. No. We have had issues with the criminal justice system and the general justice system for decades. My problem is we have lost this wonderful expertise of journalists who follow the justice system closely, not just case by case, but the systemic justice system, right? ProPublica has done some great reporting on what I just talked about, even in regards to AI and how it's seeped into the mass incarceration of Black populations in the U.S. They are able to do that because of the type of institution that they are. We don't see that type of reporting always here in Canada. So that's my first pushback. And then in terms of, well, Trump's a criminal, America wants criminals.
Or does America want
criminals? Do you remember Anthony Weiner, right? One remembers Anthony Weiner. Why did he run for office again? Why did he think he could run for office again? Because it's America. In America, you can make it. And America loves a comeback story. Come on, folks. So are we really surprised that they might be still entertaining electing a criminal? Maybe because it's the highest office in the land. Mm-hmm. But, you know.
That's probably at least in part because other presidents haven't been prosecuted for illegal things they've done. Maybe they haven't done flagrantly illegal things outside of office, and within office, that's a bit of a trickier matter. But certainly, on an ethical or moral level, there have definitely been presidents who have actually, as president, have done worse things than Trump has yet done, though I'm sure there's still opportunity to eclipse that. I personally would argue that the Iraq War was probably worse than any single thing Trump did, although arguably his whole, like, destroying American democracy thing is may have a bigger impact
in
the long
run. That's on the list. That's on the list.
Yeah. And now, to getting back to those lines between blurring Canada and the U.S., I want to talk about one more column. This is one, until I started researching this episode, I wasn't aware of this person or that he had a column. It's a guy named Josh Hammer. He's an editor-at-large at Newsweek. I believe he was previously their opinion editor. Newsweek these days is not whatever you think of Newsweek is, it's not that anymore. It's gone off the deep end broadly. But he has a syndicated column via Creator Syndicate, and it's published in not a lot of mainstream places in the States, places like, you know, Newsmax and the Daily Caller. But as it turns out, it's also published by the Sun tabloids in Canada. They dabbled in a couple last summer, but since the beginning of May, they have been running on a weekly basis in the Toronto, Ottawa, Winnipeg, Calgary, and Edmonton Sun newspapers. And this most recent one, which ran under the headline, "Post-Trump Verdict, Will the American Right Finally Wake Up?" is pretty wild, even by the standards of the Toronto Sun. I actually was, for a paper that's, you know, once had a columnist accuse people of, you know, slaughtering goats in a hotel bathroom, this is still pretty stunning.
Yes, it was really awful. And also, rest in peace, Newsweek used to be one of my favorite magazines of all time. They're a shell of themselves. Yeah, this column is absolutely atrocious. And the fact that The Sun would publish this, I didn't know they could go lower, but I guess they did.
Yeah, so I'll read a couple bits. It's not just calling out this trial as prosecution as illegitimate. It's basically a call for vengeance upon Democrats in surprisingly blunt terms. You know, that he describes doing his part to sound the alarm on District Attorney Alvin Bragg's sham prosecution and eventual show trial of former President Donald Trump ever since the George Soros-backed lawman first dropped his ludicrous 34-count indictment. I mean, that's pretty much par for the course, although he does go on to refer to the 2017 Women's March as Democratic street hooligans, whereas January 6, 2021 was merely the U.S. Capitol Jamboree. He actually uses the word jamboree. But here's the climactic portion. "The imperative of this late hour of the American Republic, in order to even attempt to rebalance our wildly off-balance pendulum, is to respond to the left as it has acted toward us, by wielding political and prosecutorial power to reward friends and punish enemies, to reward our side's forces of civilizational sanity and punish their side's forces of civilizational arson, within the broad confines of the rule of law. If we want to get back to neutrality at this perilous point, it's going to first take bloodying up some noses. That is unfortunate for those Americans who actually do value and cherish neutral enforcement of the rule of law. But yet again, here we are." Ellipsis. "We must make these miscreants pay for what they have done." That is some dark.
Yeah, I read this and I thought, this is, you know, I don't go down the rabbit hole of conspiracies on our alt-right or alt-left sides, but this is like bonkers crazy. I don't even.
Yeah.
I don't
not
understand.
Only is it like wild for a Canadian newspaper, it's once again, it's wild for an American mainstream publication, just from having, you know, Googled passages from this and other recent columns to see Where do these actually run? It's, yeah, it's mostly, I mean, Newsweek, whatever, we said talk about Newsweek. But other than that, it's, once again, it's pretty much far-right alternative sources. The fact that this published in, five daily newspapers in Canada is extraordinary. I mean, they started around, never heard of this guy. He's a lawyer, conservative, activist. He owns a Colt revolver that he's named Scalia.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, it is funny. It's absolutely funny. I saw it on Wikipedia. I'm like, oh, I better check the citation. I went through. Like, oh, yeah, there's even a photo of this. And some other of his columns from earlier this year, before the strand started running them, include with titles like Restore Order and Crush the Campus Jihadist Thugs and Alabama Supreme Court's Embryo Ruling Embodies America's Legal Heritage. So, when the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court says, media has a role to play in safeguarding the independence of our courts. This was published the day. I no reason to believe the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court has some media monitoring on the Toronto Sun. Maybe he does. I don't know. Or the Ottawa Sun. But his comments came a day after the Sun papers published a call for violent revolution, certainly revolution. I don't know. I can't tell to what degree bloodying noses is meant literally.
As a writer, I think we have a responsibility. I think anytime you use any type of violent language, if you're going to be tongue-in-cheek, you have to be quite clear about it. And we know that there's already a heightened awareness. So I don't know if I'm going to give that person the benefit of the doubt. And I do hope the Supreme Court is monitoring this so that they can also have a plan. And I'm happy the Chief Justice spoke on this. You know what the most troubling part about this is? This writer is a lawyer. And I can tell you at the highest levels, bar associations in the U.S. who regulate lawyers and other legal thinkers and scholars, they know that there are some lawyers who are peddling this. And this is totally against the rule of law. As a lawyer, you have to be somebody who upholds the rule of law. That is literally
An officer of the court, right?
Absolutely, you're an officer of the court. You make an oath to the court to uphold the rule of law. And to say that this was a sham trial for, I'm sorry, a low-level felony that has only up to 5 years in jail, if I'm going to do a sham trial, I'm going to make sure you go away for at least maybe 20 or 30 years, okay? Let's bring in and I'm going to triple that. Like, if I'm going to sham it up, I'm going to have hundreds of years. It's nonsensical and it's illogical. But as media, what are we going to do about that? We have to understand how this stuff works in order to push back on this. Am I surprised that these papers have published this? Sadly, no, because as a Black woman, I have seen what they publish about other issues that relate to my community and other people of color. So am I surprised? No. But what I do want is for media to call this stuff out, and they actually have to help educate the public what the rule of law actually is. Because when a lawyer says this, people are going to think, oh, is this trial a sham? How do I know when trials are real and a sham? That thought is what scares me about our democracy. Because once people start to think that way and lose trust in our judicial system, then we're in real trouble.
That's Shortcuts for this week. Thanks for joining me, Julie.
Thank you for having me.
Listeners can email me at jonathan@canadaland.com. I will at the very least read everything you send. You can also follow me on Blue Sky if you happen to be on Blue Sky. I've sort of parted ways with that other site. Where can people find you, Julie?
Oh, you can find me on Twitter. I'm there all the time. Yes, I'm still on Twitter.
This episode is produced by James Nicholson with additional production by Caleb Thompson. Our production manager is Max Collins. Welcome, Max. Our editor-in-chief is Karen Pugliese. Theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca.
Cego.
Buju Anin.
Danacha. At Anzeni Shukwithan.
Tonse.
Ay, Inuhadikai.
Words and culture weaves conversations with indigenous language and knowledge keepers to learn, celebrate, and connect. Join us as we delve into distinct indigenous language families, beginning in February.